At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money at Menards. Keep your lawn looking its best with Menards' premium four-part fertilizer program. Each step is tailor-made for the health of your lawn. Get started this spring with a bag of crabgrass preventer with lawn food. Apply just once early in the spring to feed your lawn for over 2 months. Pick it up in our garden center today and check out Menards.com for more hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
So when you did that deal with Josie, did you continue to have a business relationship with Josie after that deal?
No.
And why not?
You can ask Josie.
I mean, you want to hear your from your side.
Why did you have a business relationship with Josie? We're fine now.
But exactly. No, we're talking about history and facts. We're not talking about myths. And we had this conversation with Josie.
Yeah.
We want to hear from a player, from an agent point of view.
Yeah, listen, sometimes I'll tell you about Freddie. I took Freddie to Benfica.
How do we go from
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crack Podcast. What up, what up, what up, what up, what up? This is the Crack Podcast. You're on with your host, Mauricio Mookie Wilson, and I am so excited to be joined by my co-host all the way from Belgium in Europe. We have Mr. Gucci and Yewu.
Hey, he in Luxembourg.
Let him know.
And coming all the way from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Fort Wayne, Indiana. Give a big round of applause for the legend and the owner, DeMarcus Beasley. What's goody? What's goody? What's goody?
He's looking really ownership right now.
Why you say that?
You know how them owners have them old school.
Yes. Trying to support the club. Yes, he definitely does.
Hey, catch a joke. I'm still at the office.
Wow.
So, there you go. It's what time is it? It's 7:08 right now.
I know you. I know you ain't talking right now. You want me to tell you what time it is over here?
Yeah, I know. Tell
him, Goose. Tell him, Goose. The sacrifices.
Hey, I feel it. I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
And
your
I appreciate schedule. That. Look,
Your sleep schedule to join us, Gooch. I appreciate that.
Anything for you, gentlemen. You fine citizens.
Nah, man. Great to see you guys. And we're going to have an awesome show. If you don't know, we have probably the top soccer sports agents in North America. Man, that many people know, but many people don't know. And that's why we're bringing them on, Mr. Rich Motchkin. He's one of the pioneers.
Richard.
I call him Rich. We got a reference. I call him Rich. I'm sorry. I never call him Richard. But enough respect to his mother and father who gave him that name. But we call him Rich because, you know. But Rich is coming on. It's a gentleman who started in 1994. He'll get a chance to tell you his history, but definitely is... laid a lot of foundation for the professional soccer here in North America, man. So we got a lot of history, and there's a lot of good conversation, man. And, you know, guys, I want to bring on agents, business. We have owners already. We have GMs already. And not just athletes and goal scorers, but also these are people who move and shake and have a great story to tell, you know. So hoping to learn a lot today, but also just have a great conversation, you know? Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports contests, events, with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, NFL, NBA, La Liga, EPL, NHL Hockey, Combat Sports, Esports, and even Golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BLEAV50, that's BLEAV, number 50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. But forget all that. Wayne Rooney is in DC United.
Hey, well, no, we gotta start with Gooch. Gooch is from Maryland. He's from the DC area. So Gooch, can you oh shit. I see his face off. All right, I know what this means. I can see his face already.
Look. You know I got to
go ahead. Right. Yes, of course. Go ahead.
I think obviously Wayne was a great player, phenomenal, world class, right? And he's a young coach. He had a really strong season with Derby last year, given everything that they dealt with, the docking of points and how they almost got saved. You know, he really was able to create, you know, wine from water from that season. Now, DC United.
You saw that beast? You saw that?
Yeah, I saw it.
I don't know, man. I feel like, you know, with all due respect to Wayne, I think they're just trying to get attention to the club, right? Not to say that he's not the right person for the job, but it's like, on what basis? You know, he's had a short career, you know, in terms of coaching. Like, he's only had one season of head coaching, one and a half season of head coaching. And they say he's the right man for the job. Obviously, he has history in the club, and the club appreciates him. The players appreciate him. The fans appreciate him. But at the moment, I think DC United needs more than appreciation. They need a lifeline. You know, they've been underperforming for years. And they really need a revamp. And I don't think it's just a coach, to be honest. I think they need to honestly take a look at the whole organization and see what they need to restructure within that to kind of resurrect it, because it's too big of a dynasty franchise for it to go down like it's doing in these recent times. So that's my piece.
Wait. Before, Mook, I know you want to start, but so, Gooch, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, right? Just really quick. So, obviously, back in 96 when they started, all the way up to probably, 2002, 2003, you know, there was a force to be reckoned with. DC United was that club. Everyone wanted them and LA Galaxy. Those are the two clubs that – you know, I know Chicago won in the midst of that, and then obviously we kind of created a little bit of a winning culture in the Fire. But the history of the league was kind of, you know, I don't want to say founded, but it was DC United and LA Galaxy. Those are the two clubs that were the main clubs that everybody wanted to go to. So my question to you is, from being from DC, growing up in that era, what changed? You know what I'm saying? What changed from the Echeverries and the Morenos and all these guys that put DC on the map? The Pope. I mean, if you go to American players, Eddie Pope, Jeff Andrews. We can just sit here
on and on.
Yeah, on and on. So really, real talk. My question to you is, Gooch, what changed in the last 15 years from that being a team that everyone was scared about, was worried about playing, now where it's like, real franchise, to now where it's like, we got DC United. 3 points.
Fluff.
You know what I'm saying? Like, real talk, though. I'm being honest.
I mean, a lot. Ownership, culture, players. I mean, we're talking about veterans that were on DC. You know, Eddie Pope, Tony Sana, John Harkes, Echeverry, Jaime Moreno. Like, these were legends. These are people in the Hall of Fame. In MLS Hall of Fame, you know, and not to put any disrespect to the squad now, but it's not of the same caliber, but right?
Like you said, Gooch, it's definitely the front office, right? Because it looks like DC United hasn't progressed, while the MLS was progressing, right? When we had smaller number of teams, they were a big market. Now it seems like but is it that ambition? Because I want to stay on the topic of Wayne Rooney because the feedback I see from the fans have been positive. They're excited. They think that he was there as a player. He knows the culture. They think that he's young enough to motivate the players. And they feel since he was a phenomenal player, he didn't do well at Derby, but he had a tough situation there, right? We all know
he
that.
Did. He actually did do well.
Yeah, I said he did well. He did
well, meaning well. he kept the team in the.
Well, I mean he was fighting against major currents.
Exactly.
Right. They had a 15-point deficit. You know what I'm saying? Because of their front office.
So to be fair, would you rather see an older coach who yes has the resume, but you know, this can be the end towards of his career. Come over here.
No. For me, it's not even about the age of the coach. It's about like the experience that he has, what he can bring. DC United needs some kind of longevity. Like obviously, they had Ben Olsen. He was there for a number of years.
Too long.
And people can argue it was too long because they really never competed consistently throughout his tenure. Right. I think they need like an Arsene Wenger who really like constructed Arsenal, or an Alex Ferguson that created the culture at Man United up until recently. I think they need, not to say in terms of that age, but a coach of that influence that's going to stick around for the long run. Do you see Wayne Rooney staying here and wanting to be a tenured coach at at DC United?
No.
Right? You know, I don't.
If he does well, he gets DC in the playoffs, you know, and maybe he gets further getting, you know, obviously semifinals of the, what's it called? Like the conference final, semifinal. I don't even know what it's called now. The semifinals of the conference or something like that. He's going to go back to Europe. Simple as that. Am I wrong or right? If he does well here, he has a good 3-4 year. He's going
to
go back to Europe.
I don't think he even needs to do well here. I think he just needs the 1 or 2 seasons, 3 seasons.
To go back to Europe, yes.
You think
so?
To go
back to Europe, yes.
Did Vieira do well here to go back to Europe?
The thing is, I don't think he actually needed to leave Europe.
No, listen, though. Did Vieira do well to go back to Europe? Was he doing exceptionally well? Did he win anything?
I think he didn't win anything.
Who was the Atlanta coach who went to go coach Netherlands? De Boer, right?
Nah, but that's a big
he
name.
He came from home.
Yo, he was coaching the Dutch national team, and that's a big name. Same with Rooney. You know, his name will carry weight. You know, and I think that's a little bit what Goose touched on, was that it's about the experience. You know what I'm saying? It's not about him doing well for Derby for, you know, 5-6 seasons. He kept him up. Maybe he went up to the Premier League, but then maybe he dropped down. But still, he was competing at a very high level in the championship. That hasn't happened. Yes. Did he kind of overcome – not kind of, sorry. Did he overcome that 15-point deficit to give his club a chance to stay in the championship? 100%. Just like Goose said, he did well while he was there. But is that enough? Is that enough to come to a DC United team that's – you know, it's struggling. They're still trying to find their, I won't say identity, because I think they know their identity, but I think they're trying to find it again. You think he's the coach to right that wrong? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting, man, because, DC United, they need a life support, right? And what troubles me is they're paying Wayne Rooney $1 million a year salary. And I can just think of what coaches, you know, other options, like Gooch said, who has the resume that they could have gotten. But I definitely see a reaction for the fans. They definitely need to fill in the seats. And like Gooch said, this was a play for that. You know,
but to be honest, man, I disagree with that, because for me, it's not about money. Yes, is he making a big salary? 100%. But, you know, Gooch and I can say that. If we were playing this day and age, would we be making $2 to $3 million? Probably. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I want someone to argue that with me, please. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it comes with the times. Like, you know, Landon Donovan, you know, you got arguably one of the best national team players that ever played the game. Same with Clint, you know what I'm saying? They were making peanuts to what these guys are making now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Evolution sport.
Exactly. So for me, the money part, the financial part of what they're trying to do, DC United with Wayne Rooney, doesn't bother me. You know, I that part, him making $1 million, isn't a story for me.
Gooch, you're from the community. If what would take for the community to respect DC United again, right? What would it take for people to come out to these seats, wear the jerseys, and be excited again?
A lot, man. I mean, they really need to turn around everything. I really believe that in recent years they've had a lot of opportunity to have the fans behind them, and it seems like they went the wrong way every chance they got. You know, everybody was gung-ho when they finally got a stadium, right? And then you finally get the stadium, and then they really isolated a huge fan base from that stadium from entering in. There's no tailgating. There's no – you can't congregate before the game. It's literally in and get out.
Wow.
They said that?
Wow. No, that's how it's structured.
There's no space for it. Land for a tail. Like, you walk into the game, you watch the game, and you leave. And, you know, RFK, it's an old stadium, but like part of that stadium was the atmosphere, the outside people outside hours behind before the games, tailgating, enjoying the kind of build up to whatever event. There's none of that. I think that a lot of the current organization sacrificed a lot of glitz for their identity, which like we said was lost. They need to bring it back in some way, shape, or form. Fortunate for them, like we said, they have a new stadium. They're building a new complex. They have the means to invest to do well, and now it's just going to, you know, be seeing how they actually capitalize on that.
Well, listen, guys, we get every week to share our point of view, coming as fans and former players. But now this week we have a treat. We have somebody who's help build the MLS, and also I'd love to hear his opinion on Wayne Rooney coming over. I want to introduce Mr. Super Agent, the pioneer of MLS and U.S. soccer. Brought to you players like Alexi Lalas, Freddie Adu, Zach Stefan, the great Landon Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley. We can go on and on and on. When you say sports agents in North America, you have to say and respect Mr. Rich Motzkin. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. But even though I couldn't get on here right away, don't take my lack of tech savvy for still not being with it. All right?
You can see that. You can see with that haircut, you still got a cool style. You're way cooler than DeMarcus Beasley. Don't worry about it.
Hey, I still got my hair, right? So that's pretty good.
Hey. Hey, Mookie. Hey, no, you know what? I'm gonna let it go.
Hey, I was just saying that generally. That wasn't directed at anybody. But no, honestly, thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed the show, and so now I get to be in the hot seat here for a little bit, so this will be fun.
Not the hot seat, man. We're just so happy to have you on. I think you're the first, obviously, sports agent we brought on, but as well as executive. So, you know, this is – wouldn't be right bringing anybody on before bringing you on, Rich. You know what I mean? For people who don't know, can you tell them your title and your company?
Sure. So my title is, which I don't really care much about titles, but I'm the EVP and managing executive here at Wasserman. I help run the global football, as we call it in Europe, but global soccer group, as we call it here. I've been doing this for quite a long time, not years, but decades. But it's been a fun ride, and it's been amazing to see how the sport has grown domestically, internationally, men, women. Now we got a lot of not only great young active players, but we've got a lot of retired guys who can do things like what you guys are doing, or coaching, you know, being running clubs, you know, broadcasting. So it's great. I mean, how the sport's growing has been great. And, you know, the funny thing is we all play a small part of it, right? We're all part of this ecosystem. And I think so many people have such a warped and negative perception of agents, in the sense of, you know, agents are always the problem. And listen, Gooch, that's fine. We can talk about it. We can be fair. And listen, you know, there's been points and times too where Bees and I work together. But I think that, like anything in life, right, in any industry, right, you're going to have good actors and good apples, and you're going to have bad ones. And I think, you know, it's so easy where people want to always pin, like, oh, all the problems and all the stereotypes of agents, which, you know, at the end of the day, I think there are actually more good ones than bad ones. And I think at the end of the day, like, you know, yeah, you're going to have bad people who work for clubs, bad people who work at all sorts of different points. But at the end of the day, we all are part of this ecosystem helping to grow and build the sport. So
yeah, and you know what? I'll add on that because you bring up a good point, Rich. Because, and I always say this whenever I speak to, you know, to different clubs or, you know, youth clubs or anybody that's, you know, kind of in that ecosystem that you talk about, Rich, is that I'll speak for myself. My goal is to do my part where I'm at, right? So if that's in Indiana, if that's in Houston, I want to fucking win a World Cup one day.
Yeah.
So every little piece that I can do, if it's Fort Wayne, if I have a USL 2 team, if we're going to go to USL 1 or somewhere else, like, I want to do my part the right way to help any player or any executive or any staff member that I have in my club to achieve that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that and I understand what Rich is talking about when he's talking about the ecosystem. Like, our, for the whole country, the soccer world, us as you know soccer people, you know, we want in our lifetime to win a World Cup. So we have to be able to take not so much criticism, but take positive energy into what we're trying to build and not just be negative and not say, okay, it's just about me, it's about me. You know what I'm saying? I 100% agree with you with that, 100%.
And honestly, 100%. I think you just said it best too, because I always talk about it. And look, I mean, every agent's different, every person's different, all the other thing. And by the way, you know, I heard your earlier discussion, everything evolves over time, right? But one of the things that's always been clear for me, and obviously I try to impart that with everybody who works for me, it's simple. We're working in the best interest of our clients, right? And so doesn't mean it's always easy, doesn't mean it always goes the way you want. But as long as that's your focus, which is the best interest of your client and not your own self-interest, in the end, it's all going to end up being good for everybody. And so, listen, there's a lot of self-interested people who end up giving different folks a bad name for this or that. But, you know, it's, we're all in this place now where, you know, sometimes you look at, oh my God, look at what these guys are making. You guys were talking about what Rooney makes and all that. And I don't begrudge anybody making whatever they make, right? Because at the end of the day, listen, I hope if somebody's really overpaid, it's one of my guys, it's great. But at the end of the day, it's still good for everybody as this thing grows. Go ahead, Gooch. You got to say your piece.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Now, in regards to you saying, agents work in the best interest of their clients, have you ever, in the decades that you've been working, been put in a compromising situation where you're like, you know what, I might have to work in my best interest and maybe it might help my player a little bit, but, you know, everybody's going to work out at the end?
No, I mean, listen, you're often put in situations that are, that people sort of have operated in a way, whether it's in Europe or South America or whatever, where, yeah, you could operate in your self-interest. But at the end of the day, you got to ask, what's your core? What's your character? What are you going to want to do in a situation? And without getting into names and stories, pretty early on in my career when I started out,
This is the crack. No, we get into names and stories.
I want to answer your question specifically. Pretty early on in my career, and I've shared this story before, you know, I was in a situation where I was negotiating a deal with a European club for one of my players, and we were $100,000 apart. And the sporting director literally took out about $25,000 in cash and put it on the table. And it was just me and him in the room. And he said, listen, your player is going to be happy with the deal we negotiated. This is just a side present for you. And I looked at the guy right away and said, hey, this is great. Now we're only sending $5,000 apart, right? And I ended up getting the deal done. And at the end of the day, yeah, listen, everyone's got to decide. Are you just taking that money and selling your client out? Or are you just going to stand for what you believe in, right? So, and then
how often does that happen? Rich,
I mean, something that blatant, not often, but there are certainly times over the course of my career too, where there have been situations where there were things that were being done, maybe other people being brought into deal or this or that. But again, as long as it didn't have a negative effect on my client, and as long as getting that done and I was operating in the best interest of the client, and oh, by the way, with full disclosure, then that's not my issue, right? My issue is just being completely open and transparent with the client and then figuring out what's in that client's best interest at that given time. And listen, I'm not naive to think that, it's always easy and crystal clear and all the other stuff, but I can sleep at night easily, you know, in terms of knowing how I operate and how I function. And then the other thing, as I said earlier, I think, again, like bad actors will always give people a bad rep, but, you know, and like, for example, I'll give you one last example on this, right? FIFA is coming down and they want to propose all these regulations about, you know, restricting agent fees on deals because agents are making too much money and this and that. And I was at one of the very first meetings because I got invited to the meeting. And I said, before, as they're going through this, I said to these guys, I said, what is your goal, right? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? We want to give more money back into the system, right? Support all the clubs. I said, that's great. I'll be the first one to sign up. Why doesn't everybody pitch in? I'll raise my hand right now and say, every deal that's done, I'll give 1% back into the system as long as the clubs do, the players do, the leagues do, everybody. We'll all do. And of course, everyone's like, oh, no. Like, and that's just, again, symptomatic of, it's always the agents. It's always the agents. And so, you know, look.
It's a thin line, right? Because agents are there for business and business only, right? You're a business partner of the athlete. You know, I want to get into Leeds United real quick, right? Because we talked about backhand, and a lot of times clubs are built off of more than just football. And Leeds United, everybody knows, is owned by the owners for the San Francisco 49ers. They have an American coach. I'm sure, is he a client, Jesse Marsh?
Jesse's not my client.
Okay. And then they have Chris Richards.
What he's done and what he's accomplished, for sure.
Definitely. But you have Chris Richards, who I heard is looking, that they're looking at him. They'd already signed Tyler Adams and our boy Sergeant. Not Sergeant, our boy.
Aaronson.
That's quite odd, right? That a Premier League club who almost got relegated will take up three American players. It's American
two.
Owner.
You can't say three. Two.
Okay, two.
Yeah, they have two right now. Yeah,
and have American right now, coach in the Premier League, which is so competitive, number one league. And do you think they're thinking more off the field and the branding more than on the field?
I mean, again, it depends who you're asking. Are you asking about the owner's perspective, the coach's perspective? I can promise you Jesse Marsh or any manager
the owners.
Is going to sign the players that he thinks is going to help him win and stay in the Premier League. Right. That's what Jesse's going to care about. That any manager is going to want the best players possible. That's going to help him to succeed, period. You know, listen, do I think that having American owners in Europe now across England and Italy and other places, you know, may create more opportunities for American players? Sure. But I think that's a great thing. I've always said, I think that there are so many players, American players / MLS players, who, if given the opportunity at the right time in the right place, would have been really successful, right? And it's always been really, really hard for a lot of players, you know, particularly in England with their work permit rules, to get players in those situations, right? And, you know, we've all been around a long time, and sort of it's nice to see now more and more people going overseas. And listen, the players who go over got to succeed, right? That builds the credibility. But at the end of the day, I think, is there a little bit from an ownership perspective? Probably a little, but from a manager perspective,
do you think these owners really care about making profit with their football clubs? Because they're a billion, trillionaire owners. They have American football, baseball, hockey, and soccer is kind of just something that's in the mix. Do you feel that American owners, obviously, is going to benefit in network-wise, but do you think that, because the game is changing, right? And the owners of the past had passion and love for the community, had passion and love for the city, for the badge. Now you have foreign owners. Do you feel that?
Rich, before you even answer this question, I'm coming from an owner's perspective, right? Not saying because I'm an owner of a, you know, Division 4 team, but just saying, like, in Europe, it's a different animal, because I'm just thinking, if the guy from the owner from Leeds is, you know, he signed these players, American players, whatever, he let Rafinha go and, you know, Calvin Phillips to Man City, you know, I 100% think that he is not trying to get relegated, because that's a loss on him. Yeah, exactly. So
huge financial risk.
Yeah, exactly. So before you even ask a question to Rich and his point of view and his perspective and what he thinks about that, like, I'm just thinking, like, from an owner's perspective, yes, he trusts his coach. That's a good thing for Jesse. He, you know, he feels backed. He feels like, okay, I want this player. My owner says, hey, look, you know what? I trust you. But we got to make this work. I guarantee he's not trying to lose half of his investment, because he will if he goes out to the championship.
More than half.
Nobody plays to lose at the end of the
day.
That's
what I'm saying. So I'm just saying, I'm just going for Mookie's question.
Yeah.
I'm just like, no owner is going to think that. You know, just, I'm thinking business and, you know, commercial and the media and all this stuff. But my soccer team or my whatever you want to call it, football team, is being relegated. So I just lost more than half of my investment I just put into it. No, I don't think that. I don't agree with that.
And by the way, I'm not even just talking about American players. I think like for MLS players, right? Leeds has got a guy, Jack Harrison. People don't talk about it. Jack Harrison was developed in MLS and, you know, ended up getting
college.
You know, even got to look at the U.S. national team. I mean, the English national team over there. And he was an important player. He scored the goal that helped him stay up. And he's been pretty good over there at Leeds, right? And I think like, when you think about players who've played in MLS over the years, if they had been given the opportunity at the right place at the right time, I don't know why it just popped in my head. Like a guy like Ozzie Alonso when he was in Seattle, I mean, really good player. Not my client, so, you know, I'm not biased in that. Or even, you know, recent guys who are playing in this league and doing really well. There's a lot of talented guys that, you know, I've got no doubt in the right place over there, they could succeed. And hopefully we see more of that, right? It's good for the ecosystem.
So staying on owners, staying on MLS, what the hell is going on with DC United?
I thought we already talked about
it. I want to hear from
Rich. What the hell is going on with DC United?
I heard you guys talk about that before I came on. And, you know, it's for Goosh, it's hometown, right? So, no, I mean, look, I think – put aside DC United for perspective. I think in a lot of sports, right, I think continuity, consistency, having a plan, having a vision, like all those things matter, right? And I think when you look at – you know, some of the more successful teams across sports, right? You know, a lot of these teams have had, whether it's, you know, at the coaching level or a core group of players. That I think you need that structure. I also think you need guys in the locker room who are winners and who've won something. And again, these are just general comments. But I think that, when you have, when teams have constant upheaval and they're, you know, maybe they don't have a clear identity or whatever. I think it's hard to sort of, you know, you look at teams like the Warriors who've had a core group in basketball over the years, and they've been able to stick to that and win. And so I think, and then the last thing, and I've said this over and over and over again, especially with the advent of free agency in MLS, having guys who know this league, understand this league, and are high performing, you know, players in this league is hugely critical, is very important, right? You look at, I'm picking an example, right? A team like Austin FC. You got guys right there at the top of the table in the West, and, you know, they took their lumps last year, but they stuck with their plan, and then they put in free agents like Ethan Finley or Diego Fagundes. And, like, getting core free agents, you know, a Houston with Steve Clark, bringing in some leadership there, I think he's helped them in a lot of ways, and BG would know. But I think there's a lot of these guys, and more and more become free agents, like, to me, they're grossly undervalued, and having those guys are huge. So, you know, going back to DC, listen, do I think they're going to lose every game 7-0? No. Do I think that, you know, that it's, you know, it, you know,
you
I think
it's looking, it. Do you, you think it's looking it. Up? You do you think it's looking yeah, on the up went, and up?
No, he doesn't. I can tell.
Listen, I think they got some work to do. How about that? So, what do you guys think?
Well, we spoke about that, but Rich, you are a person who had some phenomenal clients in your past, right? You had Alexi Lalas, you had Landon Donovan. I want to talk a little bit about when you had DeMarcus Beasley. How was that from your point of view? When did you start working with DeMarcus Beasley?
Which DeMarcus Beasley years? Beez has been with me for like
Let's talk about it, Gooch. Let's talk about it.
What I'll say about Beez, among other things, though, you talk about like, you know, where this league was and where the soccer was, you know, and, you know, back in the late 90s versus it is now. You know, I give a lot of credit, right? You look at start with Alexi Lalas, who's, you know, one of the first players signed in this league. And honestly, and I'll say this, if Alexi wasn't my first client, I probably wouldn't be doing what I did, right? I was a young lawyer, I was a big law firm, and I sort of saw this guy who had a passion to build something in a sport in this country. And at the time, you know, he was playing in Serie A, opened that door for Gooch. You know, his first American to do that and was playing at the highest level. And he sort of gave all that up to say, listen, you know, I want to come and help start a, you know, if I can help start soccer in this country and a pro league in this country, and that's part of my legacy, you know, that means more than me to playing in Serie A and all this. And look,
so he had opportunities to play. He had at that point when he came back to MLS, he had offers and contracts in the Serie A.
He had offers in Serie A, Bundesliga, and the Premier League. Okay. And so, I mean, but he chose to come back here now, at
Rich,
a time when
Rich, you know, what was the money difference? You as an agent, was he?
I wasn't gonna let him. I wasn't gonna let him take a huge pay guy. Listen,
okay.
The money difference was negligible, right? No. You know, there probably wasn't a money difference per se, but the credibility, right? Everyone's like Champions League. And listen, trust me, I've been through it a lot with a lot of players, and every player should do what they want. And that's something that I learned from Landon, honestly, which I can get to in a second. But what I was saying about Lexi is he was a trailblazer and a pioneer because he gave up a lot to do this. And people don't understand or appreciate that about him at all. You know, he's very polarizing, I think, to a lot of people now, but he really like sort of said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. If I can do this for my life and make that difference, that's great. Cause trust me, these knows back in the day, you know, if the players were making $800 a month, you can only imagine what I was making. And you can only imagine if my wife wasn't supporting me, you know, my dad was like, what are you really doing? This is nuts. You've given up a law career to do this. You know, the sport barely existed here. So, you know, he gets a lot of credit for sort of, you know, really sort of sticking to it. Cause there's times where I was like, this is 5 years. This thing is like barely surviving. Like, what are we doing here? And then, you know, so you go, that was in the mid 90s. And then you go to sort of that U17 team that Bees and Landon were the stars of.
Let's talk
and
about
honestly,
that.
Again, that team doesn't get enough credit, right? I think it's still the team that's gone the furthest in a
did you have tournament. Did you have Landon from then, from his first contract?
Yeah, yeah. I had Landon since he was like 15 or 16 years old, whatever it was. But yeah, Landon, you know, I mean.
So Bees, who did you sign with? Who's your first agent?
my first ever agent was my cousin. His name was Dana Martin. But in the world scheme of football, my next agent, soccer agent, was Dan Siegel.
Don't belittle Dana now.
Yeah, big up Dana.
Oh, that's my guy.
Dan's my partner. Dan's in DC.
Yeah, Dana. Yeah, he did my deal. He did my deal. Well, I mean, it wasn't much to do with the Project 40 contract back in, you know, into 99. So,
so when you went to Dan Siegel, Rich, were you and Dan partners already or separate?
No, I don't think so.
You guys were partners.
Yeah, they were separate.
Yeah, we weren't together then. Yeah, we got together about 20 years ago.
So how come you didn't go? How come you didn't? Did you ever approach or make a pitch towards Bees, or you realized that Landon was a way better player and you didn't care about Bees?
Fuck off.
Hey, I'm gonna say, listen. Part of this is as I get older, I lose. I don't have as good a memory about some of this stuff now. And by the way, it's actually all nice because like at the end of the day, we've all sort of grown up together in a lot of different ways.
Definitely.
And again, we all wish each other well and want good stuff for us. But what I was going to say about that U17 team and answering your other question. So my wife and I went to New Zealand with, you know, to go watch that tournament, you know, and Landon lived with us for a bit. So, you know, obviously sort of a de facto son at the time, but watching that team play, I mean, that was an incredibly talented and fun team that had, and Gooch too. I don't want to not give you some props as well, but that was a team that like
I was waiting on it.
Yeah. No, so I told you, my mind moves a little slower now. Now I'm going back to front now in my mind. You got DJ and you and Nelson and Kyle and Bees and Bobby and Landon. So it's all clicking in now. So I'm remembering now, and Kenny Cutler and all these guys and Sila. But like that team had swagger. That team had so much fun and so much self-belief. It was like almost shocking when you guys lost in PKs in the semifinal because it was like there's no way you weren't going to win that tournament, right? Like you guys and so watching that team to this day too is still one of the most favorite teams that I've sort of watched from a youth from a U.S. perspective at any level. And then not to take you out of the equation as a defender, but Landon and Bees' understanding, the way those two played together was really something special too. So Bees had more hair than though.
Yeah, throw that in there.
Slightly. Yeah. He had a light fade.
But I think also that team also helped U.S. soccer too in a lot of ways because it was like, wow, this young group of kids, you know, basically went further than any other U.S. group. And honestly, all these people, right, there's all these different points and, you know, sort of reflection points that I think helped grow the sport. Because I also think at that time, the league was sort of, you know, like this a little bit. And you had people saying, you know what, we got good young talented players. I think it sort of helped sort of that, whatever they call it at the point. Now we're like MLS 5.0, but back then it was like 2.0 to get people to say, okay, let's invest a little bit more because, you know.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that, the investment at that point? Like when the league first started, I'm sure it was so rocky. The money wasn't there. It only had so many franchises. When that, I really feel, obviously, like you said, they focus on that generation of Bees and Landon Donovan. Tell us the conversations you had with Don Garber. I mean, obviously, it's a long time ago. What was the thought process and marketing and pushing that generation?
That's why I'm not even sure if Garber was there. There was another guy before him, but Garber might have come in and around that time. Mm. But I think the thought process was, you know, look, I mean, again, at this time, and Bees will remember some of this too, and Gooch, you probably as well. You know, I think there was, you know, the league had contracted. There was only 10 teams left, and Phil Anschutz owned 7 of them, right, or something like that. And so, you know, it was, you know, if Phil Anschutz woke up one morning and said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, this whole thing would have been gone.
Who was that?
But slowly, Phil Anschutz.
Oh, Anschutz. Okay, he's the money.
He owns, I mean, now he owns just the Galaxy, but he owned, yeah. I mean, people don't remember this. 20 years ago, he owned 70% of the league.
Yeah. He owned Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, he owned, you know, there were fewer teams he didn't own than he owned. But like, honestly, if he woke up one morning and said, you know what, I don't want to lose any more money, the whole thing would have cratered. And so again, in the history of sort of the sport, you know, like, and that's why the trophy is appropriate. The MLS Cup trophy is appropriately named after him because, you know, he invested a lot of time, money. And look, people see today, right? You know, and Bees was talking about this earlier too. People see today, oh, you know, all this money and, you know, for the franchises and this and that or whatever. But again, a lot of people invested a lot to get it to this point. And listen, hopefully it keeps growing and growing, and it will now because fortunately we don't have just one person owning so many teams and you got a lot of people wanting to get in. But, you know, for those of us on this call, Gooch, Bees, me, like, you know, it was really lean days back then. And I remember right around 2000, like there was a serious question whether the league was going to survive, you know, and Phil said, okay, I'll just keep going for another X number of years. Right. So,
yeah. So Rich, let me ask you a question really quick. So we kind of touched a little bit on Garber. So as an agent and as obviously a super agent, because you've been in the game for, you know, decades, do you have more of a relationship with the clubs and the owners of those clubs or with Don Garber?
At this point, definitely the clubs, in the sense that I don't really deal with MLS much anymore. I mean, we've gotten a little bit more into an area where I'm dealing more with the clubs, you know, again, whether it's the GM, sporting directors or presidents, you know, because, you know, obviously everything still, quote, ultimately has to go through MLS. But, you know, the clubs really more and more are the ones who are dictating who they want to sign and at what levels and as long as it's salary compliant and all that. And again, I don't care at all about salary caps or this or that, right? I care about, you know, what's the deal look like for my player and, you know, and what are the important factors, whether it's obviously the money's important or the term or the escalators or the whatever, all this stuff, right? And that's what I care about, you know, whether or not it fits within their structure, that's not my issue. So, but yeah I don't, you know, I mean, so
was
I don't.
Was it ever the adverse where it was more with Don in the league than, you know, talking with the
because you know, back in the beginning part of the league really did all the everything. Deals, right? Yeah. The teams had very little say in what was going on. And then, like, you know, listen, there'd be like pretty contentious CBA negotiations that would go on, and guys like Landon would have a pretty heavy role in that. And, you know, and so there were definitely, yeah, back in the early days, there was, you know, it was probably the reverse for sure.
I'll piggyback on that, because when I left for PSV, the first European team I went to, you know, I was talking to Don Garber. I wasn't talking to Phil Anschutz. Like, I was on the phone after training. Don Garber would call my cell phone and be like, okay, what can we do to get you to stay? You know, it wasn't the Chicago Fire. it wasn't, you know, but yeah, of course, Bob and, you know, those guys didn't want, well, not Bob, because obviously after that was Dave Sirkin, but, you know, they were like, hey, you know, we want you to stay. But the person that was trying to convince me more so than anyone was Don Garber.
The commissioner.
The commissioner. He was calling me and saying, hey, Bees, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? You know, we want you to stay. Like, what is it going to take for you to stay? It wasn't the Chicago Fire. You know, I said, I love, like, Peter Wilt. He was he's my mentor to this day, my guy. I love Peter Wilt to this day. But I wasn't talking to Peter Wilt. I was talking to Don Garber. I still remember those phone calls I had with Mr. Garber.
So that's interesting.
He's right.
That's interesting.
Right. By the way, for example, right, recent transfers that we've done from players who've gone from, you know, MLS overseas, you know, George Bello to Bielefeld, and, you know, we've obviously done McKenzie and Aaron Tollett. Like, we know we're not – it's all with the teams now, right? You know, and ultimately, you know, I prefer it that way and let them have whatever internal discussions they need to deal with the league, you know? So
what we like to do is get a lot of insight on certain deals that you were involved in. I think one of the main ones you have to speak about is Landon, him going over to Germany and then coming back to the MLS. Can you walk us through, and was Don Garber a part of that and trying to get him back, or was that strictly Landon? Give us a little insight on why was that decision that he made, because everybody talks about that.
Yeah, no, listen, and I sort of alluded to it earlier about, you know, you learn things from different people, and one of the things that I learned from Landon is that, and ultimately he chose and prioritized happiness in his life, right? Mm-hmm. And for him, being happy meant being home, close to home, and playing in front of family and friends. And look, everyone's going to make whatever decision is best for them. I wouldn't do what I would do if I'm not pretty competitive, right? And I think, you know, I grew up the fifth of six kids, so you got to be pretty competitive just to sort of get a voice heard, right? And, you know, for me, and I think everyone, you know, if I was, you know, fortunate enough to be a professional athlete, you know, I think, you know, the way I'm wired would be to say, listen, I want to try to, you know, challenge myself at the highest level and this and that. And so I think a lot of people think that way. And I think that's appropriate way for one, you know, in a lot of ways, right? If you want to be successful. But the flip side is, you know, there's a lot of different ways to define success. And there's a lot of different factors that I think everyone should balance. And so that was, you know, for him, what happened, like a lot of young players who are super talented, right? He signed over in Germany and he was a kid who was used to playing every minute of every game and scoring goals and being the star. And he walked over to a Leverkusen team that, you know, had been in a Champions League final and had players like, you know, Zé Roberto and Lucio and Ulf Kirsten and Bernd Schneider, German national team players, Brazilian players, and he wasn't playing, right? And so that gets frustrating. And oh, by the way, he went to a country where he didn't speak the language, and he went from sunny Southern California to, you know, to Leverkusen, where it's also raining a lot and dark. And so, you know, as a kid who had just turned 18, right? So I think that the first time, you know, because he actually came back twice. The first time after a couple of years there, you know, we brought him back on loan. Ended up San Jose happened to be the worst team in the league at the time. He went there. It was pretty
much
magical.
Right now.
What?
Like now, like right now.
I thought you said
DC was the worst coach.
Yeah, now, yeah.
it's a coin toss. It's a coin toss, Rich.
That's fair. So he came back. He did 2 years here. You know, went to the 2002 World Cup. We're able, I think, to extend it at that time another 2 years or something like that. Again, part of this, my memory might fail me. But what happened when we brought him back for the full time, you know, he had gone back. And again, at that point, he'd actually had a good World Cup, you know, and felt like he deserved playing time, but he still wasn't getting playing time. And ultimately said, you know what, like, you know, I'd rather be home. And yeah, we worked it out so that he came back. And, you know, so he played, ended up playing 4 years in San Jose on two different loans. But then when he came back permanently, yeah, there are a lot of conversations going back to your question about Garber, because people also don't realize it. He was the most expensive transfer ever for the league at that time. I think they ended up having to pay like $3.5 or $4 million to buy him or something at the time. And that was big money in 2004, right? You know, that.
How much did you get out of it?
Leverkusen. Trust me, Leverkusen did okay. I know Goop wants to see the bank receipts from 2004. Just to double check. Trust me. But I actually remember it because we got it done. The US net met, we were in Birmingham, Alabama for a qualifier, against Guatemala. And like, it was 24 hours, like in the hotel room leading up to that game. And the window was closing that day. And it was like, it's coming back to me now, but it was like crazy. Back and forth. And yeah. And it was like with Garber and Mark Abbott and actually Ivan Gazidis at the time, who was the deputy commissioner.
Ivan was
involved then. He's now obviously at, AC Milan, Gooch's place. And, yeah, I mean, it was, and it, you know, I get all these deals that come down to the wire, right? You just get it done right at the end. And then I think, were either you guys in that game? There was a game that was in Birmingham, Alabama. For some reason, I think it was a qualifier.
I was there.
I feel like it was like a 2-0 game or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I remember that game. So Rich, yeah. let me ask you a question really quick. So, I know, obviously we all know, and the world knows how close you and Landon are. You know, like you said, he lived at your house. You know, he was, you know.
He's our first practice child.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? He's basically your child. So put all that kind of aside and, you know, put on the Rich Moskin fan hat for a second. Just for a second. And obviously we all know Landon's my guy, no problem. So would you have wanted Landon to play more in Europe, more so than MLS?
For me? Absolutely. Because for me, right, I still think talent-wise, you know, Landon's one of the most talented players that I've ever seen, right? And I think Landon's talent, his understanding of the game, and his technical ability and all that, I mean, I believe he could have played anywhere in the world, right? And I think, you know, listen, there were obviously he had a pretty good first loan stint at Everton where he went there and they had a magical run when he was there. They, you know, and yeah, part of me wishes he had stayed there longer. I think they won 9 of 11 games he played, right? And, you know, so as a fan, you know, I would have loved to seen him play at Man U, Barcelona, Real Madrid and all the other stuff because I think, you know, he's got the, you know, ability to do so. And by the way, by analogy, I'll give a current guy who I think is similar in that way, which is Darlington Nagby. Nagby is an unbelievably talented footballer.
Yeah, I talked to Darlington.
We love him.
His technical ability, his vision, his understanding. I think he could play anywhere in the world, right? I do. And, you know, but on the same hand, you know, he's one of our guys and, you know, he's really happy, you know, playing at home in front of family and friends. And by the way, he's won about three different – he's only got to ever win MLS Cups with three different teams. And so, look, I applaud everyone. Everyone should make whatever decision's best for their life. But whether it's Landon or Nagby or anybody, you know, yeah, for me, I'd love to have seen these guys try to compete at the highest level. Because I think
are you trying to say that Nagby had an opportunity to go overseas and he turned it down?
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that. We had conversations. I'm not going to tell you what club because that's not my place.
I knew he didn't want to play the national team again, but I didn't realize.
Like, I know he didn't want to play.
I do know because we had a conversation about because obviously towards the end of my career with the national team, I was there when Nagy was there.
What country was it?
I'm not going to say. I'm telling you right now, listen.
I mean, listen. I think I know the sport. We all think we know the sport. I think Darlington could play anywhere in the world and be successful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I do. You know.
Listen,
and I'll give you another example. Like, it's funny. These are popping into my head. We're just riffing. But you know, when we sent Weston McKennie to Juventus, and we kept that on the down low, and you know, obviously he'd done well at Schalke. There was a lot of interest from him and many different clubs around the world. And I remember when we first sent him to Juventus, it surprised a lot of people. And then we also got all these people saying, oh, you know, that's too big of a club. He'll never play there, da-da-da. And I said, you know, and I think Weston, in a different way, I mean, he's
confidence.
He's a player that's going to find his way in the field wherever he is. Obviously in his time at Juventus, he proved that, right? His first year, he ended up playing a lot. And then even when Allegri came in, he was like, okay, we're not sure. And by mid-season, he's like, he's one of my top 3 to 5 players. And
do you think he has, you know, anything to worry about with Pogba coming over now?
No. Okay. As long as Weston McKennie's healthy, I don't care what club he's at, he's going to find his way on the field because he's got that mentality. He's a warrior. He's a bulldog. He's got a charisma and a self-confidence about him that is really engaging and that, you know, and he's a winner, right? And so, you know.
But Rich, we spoke about
Mookie, I'm biased, but I believe that, yeah.
We've been talking about positive players and, you know, Landon is talent, Weston is talent, XYZ. Give us a player that you wish you hadn't taken aboard and signed. That perhaps maybe that wasn't the best fit with you guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to necessarily publicly slag anyone. And just so we're clear, like, I think Landon and Weston are, just so we're clear, I think Landon and Weston are different in a sense, right? I think I think they're both talented, but they bring different characteristics. But to your question, I'll answer it differently, which is, and it's now as I'm older and I'm in a different place in my life, like, you realize, and I try to impart this on the folks that work with me, you know, it's not representing assholes. Like, it's just not, like, at the end of the day, you want to get people who have good characters. And look,
who's the biggest asshole that you ever worked with?
When you're younger, like, and you're starting off like anything else, right? You want to build a client base. You want to represent all the best and brightest. But look, as you get older, you realize, you know what? Like, no one's going to change my life. Whether I sign somebody right now, it's not going to change my life, right? You know, I am who I am. I am where I'm at. Like, you know.
I have a sincere question because, you know, you speak of people like Bees and other people find they go in and out with agents. Is there anybody who sticks out to you that you lost, maybe off of something you did, maybe off of something you didn't do, that really hurt, you know what I mean? Really hits you here, and you're like, man, I love this guy. I did so much for this guy, and I believed in him. And I think, you know, he made a wrong decision leaving me, or I made a wrong decision when I was working with him that caused it.
Well, two comments. One, anyone who left me made a wrong decision.
He's looking at you.
I know.
By the way, people who did leave me, I've been fortunate that in some instances they've come back too. And, you know, and listen, depending on how they left me, I've said, great, come on back. And in some instances I've said, no, thank you. Right. Yeah. And that's part of it. There have been people that have left me that I did a really, really good job. And again, fortunately, I haven't lost that many over time, but there's been a couple that I did a really, really amazing job for and, you know, brought them to some pretty, you know, brought them to clubs and pretty high leagues and all that. And look, I get it, right? People are young and impressionable and, you know, hear things and, you know, and look, at the end of the day, there are probably a couple over the years. I don't know at this point. I might save it for my book when I write my book.
Okay.
If you can't say the names, can you say the countries or the teams that they were at?
I'll make it too easy. Listen, you know, because at the end, this is a relationship-oriented business, right? And so you care about the people that you work with. And again, saying something I said earlier, in addition to not wanting to work with assholes, as you get older, you also realize you want to work with people who understand it's mutual, right? And so if the player, it's always about me, that's not a relationship I'm interested in sort of being a part of. A and B, it's going to end badly. You know, you want the players to say, you know what, we're all in this together, right? If a player does well, we all do well. If they don't, we don't. But it's got to be something where it's mutual, because if it's not, then I think it won't work long term.
I agree. I think I'm so interested when we say when players jumped across the pond, right? And how instrumental you are in taking players from the MLS and getting them opportunities overseas. Could we talk about a couple players? Jozy Altidore had, you know, quite a good run in Europe. But let's go back to when you first started working with him and doing these deals. He played for what, AZ in Holland?
Yeah, but I didn't do that deal. I helped with the deal that brought him to Villarreal.
Oh, yes. I forgot he was a yellow boat.
Yeah.
What happened with that?
He was at Villarreal before he was at AZ.
Yeah, no, I helped him with his first move over there. But then after that, I did. Yeah. But
How was that experience? Like,
I traveled over there with his dad, listen, there, all these experiences are interesting, and, you know, I've been fortunate enough as I sort of think about my career, right? I've moved people to La Liga, to Serie A, to, you know, France, Holland, Belgium, you know, like this job, right? I've been able to see the world. I mean, I've gone to Ecuador. I've got brought all over, right?
Some of these worlds you get to see, you were strictly business. You went over there busting your ass for these players.
Yeah. And so everyone has its story, and everyone's like, you know.
I just remember though, Gooch, that when he went to Villarreal, it was like something was, I don't remember because a little while ago, it was something that was intricate about that deal. And that's what we wanted to know about, because, you know, these are things that we can work on and we can kind of learn from, and also people watching us can learn from, you know. But
well, at the time, it was the biggest transfer from MLS, right? It was like $10 million or something. Wow. So, you know, and it wasn't easy, and there was a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes, because, you know, and by the way, one of the things you learn too in all this is timing matters, right? Mm. You want to hit when timing's, you know, when. Well, you know, and listen, a good example of that, not my guy, but, you know, Dallas, if you sold Pepe at literally the perfect time, right? I mean, he'd score 2 goals and everyone was blowing him up. And look, he's still young. He's still got a bright future and all the other stuff. But, you know, it's, when you have timing on your side, it's important to act and take advantage of it.
So when you did that deal with Josie, did you continue to have a business relationship with Josie after that deal?
No.
And why not?
You can ask Josie.
I mean, Dave, we want to hear from your side.
We're fine now. We're fine now. But
exactly. No, we're talking about history and facts. We're not talking about myths. And we had this conversation with Josie.
Yeah.
We want to hear from a player, from an agent point of view.
Yeah, listen, sometimes I'll tell you about Freddie. I took Freddie to Benfica.
How do we go from
what am I gonna say? Generally is a lot of people, right? Let me put it this way. When people go to Europe, like you did, right? You got a lot of people all the time banging on you, right? I mean, especially, you know, and even more so now, right? With cell phones and social media and all that. Yeah. But look, I'm not naive, right? When our players go over to Europe, you know, especially back then, you know, you got every agent in that country banging on your ear when you're doing well. You've got every agent all around Europe banging on your ear. You know, they're making promises and this and that. And, you know, listen, you know, it's sometimes people buy into that stuff.
So Rich, what did you learn from that deal? What was the learning?
Well, listen, part of what I learned from all these deals, right, as you grow and build your business, right? I got two guys, for example, in Germany now. I got, you know, I've got a much bigger network, and I've got people on the ground in certain places, you know, to make sure that our guys are being serviced and taken care of and looked after. No different than I'd want my own children to be looked after, right? And again, it's part of as you evolve and grow. You know, your clients are family, but you also got to figure out how to, you know, make sure that, you know, things are being handled the right way. So
now, you know, Josie Altidore, Landon Donovan, they're around 17 years old, 18 years old when they started working with you, going overseas. Freddie Adu, let's speak about, that was supposed to be the face of MLS, 14-year-old, you have in your pocket, you signed an MLS deal. I heard rumors that he had Inter Milan, he had Manchester United. What was the opportunities? And he had Benfica. What was the opportunities that he had in Europe?
All that's true. We had, you know, big clubs in England, Italy, Holland. Again, but there's also the practical realities of what do the rules allow, right? And the rules, you know, only allow you to sign when you're 18 years old, right? And so, he's, you know, I remember being in Finland at the U17 tournament in Finland, he scores a hat trick, and I'm sitting with, you know, all these scouts all around, and like, you know, every goal he's scoring, right, they're salivating and all this, but he's also 13 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you use all that as leverage, but as a practical matter, right, you know, he couldn't play anywhere else in the world for 4 more years. And, you know, with that leverage, what were we able to do? We were able to make him the highest paid player in the league at the time, which when you think about it now, to say a 14-year-old was the highest paid player in the league, it's a bit absurd, right?
Crazy.
And like everything, right? You learn from all this stuff. You know, was there too much attention showered on Freddie? Yes. Did it affect, you know, ultimately did it affect him, which is understandable. He's a kid in a way that didn't help his career. Yes.
And that's your question. The way you coddled and treated Landon Donovan, did you use the same approach and get the same effort with Freddie Adu?
I don't know if I call anybody.
No, well, I'm saying you cooking dinner. He lived in your house.
No, that's different, right? But it's different. I mean, Freddie's living at home with his whole family, and you know. So, but look, do I try to protect all the people that I work with? Yeah, and I think that one of the things you learn from that situation, though, is when people get their marketing, when people get their notoriety and their exposure, it should be because of what they do on the field, right? Performance is what should lead to everything else, right? Whether it's better contracts, more marketing, more opportunities. And in Freddie's case, it was the exact opposite because, listen, everyone was hungry for this next Pele. And, he had national commercials running before he'd ever kicked a soccer with Pele, no less, before he'd ever kicked a soccer ball, right? And so, look, did that help him? Did that help him financially? Sure. Did that help his professional career? No. And then ultimately, as you fast forward over time, right, everyone's still responsible for what they get out of life, what they get out of the soccer field. I think that Freddie had an incredible talent, right? But I think, and he'll admit this to you too, like I think at times he didn't put the effort in to really continue to sort of rise and, get to that next level.
Definitely.
So, Gooch, I got a question. So, obviously, we've heard a lot from Rich's perspective, from an agent's perspective. But as a player, I think, fans would want to know and people that listen to our show, when you were, obviously, through your whole career, how many ever agents you had, what was your deciding factor when you chose an agent? What were you looking for? Was it more, okay, he can get me, he has the best contacts, he has the best clubs that he's, associated with. Cool, or you needed, more of a friend, more of a family type, environment. Like for you as a player, what was, because every player is different, as Rich always says, every player is different. So for you, what made you, sign with an agent?
Well, I didn't win the gold and the silver ball, so Rich wasn't looking my way. So
Bees, he's still mad about that.
It's good to finally hear Gooch. It's good to hear Gooch speech. I've never heard him this quiet before either, so it's good to get him going.
So obviously my path was different from you guys, right? Because I went to college for a couple of years. And so my parents kind of forced me or made me go to college. So I went to Clemson. And then at that point, because we had such a successful U-20s and we had such a successful U-17s and we had a talented U-20s, there was all these agents. And I honestly, for me, and this is how I do it in my life, it was just like who I felt like connected with me more, right? Who I didn't feel like was a weasel at that time. And my first agent who I didn't stick with for more than like a hot minute is who got me actually into Europe and France. And I think I went to France and probably left him or he kind of disappeared soon after. And then, I had a couple different agencies from there. And then I think like halfway through my career in 2009, I just never used an agent again. I was just like—
But you didn't answer the question though.
Yeah, so when you had an agent, but like, did you want an agent because he had a connections, or you needed that more kind of?
It was a combination.
If your agent is in your city and he's watching it, would you want to go to dinner with him? Would you come to the house, chill, or just like no?
I didn't really deal. I didn't want them to be fake with me. Like, oh, let's hang out, keep it real. Like, you want to work with me? I want to give you, the best product. I just wanted somebody to be real. Like, I didn't need all the fluff and the hoopla. And my parents and my family were involved as well, so they didn't deal with any of that hoopla. And they'd tell me, like, don't trust this guy. It is what it is. And so, obviously, you wanted people with connections because you don't want to deal with somebody that can't put you anywhere. but you want to deal with somebody that's real and it's not like promising you the world and like delivering like tuna fish. You know what I mean? So you wanted somebody that was like legit to their word and be like, hey, we're not going to get you to Madrid, but we can get you here and build you like this. And this is the best step for you in your progression right now. So that's what I was looking for.
Tabiz, how would you answer that question?
Me? I wanted the more, I like the friend vibe. You know what I'm saying? Like I love the ability to have a connection with my agent. You know what I'm saying? Like that was important to me. You know what I'm saying? So obviously I had my cousin first, and then obviously with Dan Siegel, he was with me for like a, I think maybe a couple of years before I signed with Paul Stretford and Lyle, when it was at Proactive, when I went to Europe. But I liked that part of it. Like I liked the, you know, the kind of camaraderie and, you know, like if he was in a city, like, hey, let's go to dinner before the game or after the game. Let's, you know, come to the crib. Let's chill. You know, like I wanted to, you know that person. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just, look, you get me deals and you stay in your lane and I'll stay in
mine. That's not how it was with me.
I did not say it was you. I'm saying that's not how I wanted it. Like I said, every player is different. Like there's players that just, and I know players that just like, look, you do this for me, I'll kick the ball in the goal, or I'll defend, or I'll be the goalkeeper, whatever it is. We don't need to talk. We don't need a relationship. Cool. So, you know what I'm saying? But so, for me, I wouldn't have had that type of agent, you know, on my team.
Bees, at what point did you sign with Rich, and what was the reason for signing with Rich? Or
so I left. I left.
Don't laugh. Keep it real now, Bees.
All right, I'll keep it.
I will
keep it 100. And Bees, you know, so when I was with Lyle, I was with Lyle for, I don't know what, 10, 11 years. It was a long, basically throughout my whole career. And then obviously when I went to Mexico as well. Wow. And so I left. Y'all want to know the reason why I left?
Yes.
Yes.
Rich does too.
So I left Lyle because I felt disrespected. And I told him this. I told, you know, James this as well, the guy that works with Lyle. I don't know if they do still do. James is a great guy. Lyle, still my guy, you know, just whatever. Anyway.
They made fun of his hairline.
So when I went to Puebla, you know, Lyle was there, came over. And, you know, usually, as I'm sure Rich knows and Gooch, you know, you get the essentials done, you know, house, car, cell phone, you know, those are the essential things you really get to, you know, obviously, for a new player in a new country. And that didn't happen at that country. Everywhere else, it happened. So when I went to Mexico, signed the deal, he left. Literally left. And he put me with a guy that did some real estate with the club, helped out with Puebla. And, you know, I was supposed to sign some, you know, housing deal that didn't have any amount of what I was going to pay like a month. It was just me signing a contract. And I'm like, wait, hold up. There's no amount of what I'm paying every month on the sheet, on the contract. Like, what am I signing? And I'm, you know, trying to call out. I'm like, yo, y'all just left me by myself to, fend with the people, you know? And, you know, I felt disrespected. So I called. And I'll be real. This is a 100% true story. This is when Lyle and James, they signed Salcido. And that's when he went from Fulham to Tigres. That deal. So they did, you know, they helped with that deal. They're in Mexico. Did they come to Puebla to sort out my stuff?
He was sensitive.
Did not come. Oh, I mean, this is what we do. You know, it's just, look, I don't need someone to baby me. I mean, this is like my sixth club. You know what I'm saying? I don't need you to baby me. I can do my own. But the essentials, what you kind of help the player to, you know, to do and to get with, that's all I needed. And they were not nowhere to be found. But I called. They're like, wait, let me. Y'all want to hear the story, right? You want to hear the story?
I want to hear the story. I
thought the story was over.
Yo, this is the first time I've ever said no one ever heard this story. Obviously, they know. And So when I said this and I told Jay, I'm like, yo, you guys are in Monterrey and you left. Like, y'all didn't come to Puebla. Like, you know, I'm struggling to get all this stuff done, and y'all just left me by myself to defend in Mexico, where I don't speak the language. You know, I have zero help. And they were like, yeah, no, I'm, you know, we're sorry, this and that, we're gonna come. But I'm like, no. And this has been like after like 2 or 3 weeks. This is not like just a day or 2 days. This is like 3 weeks. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm just doing everything by myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I speak a little bit of Spanish at the time, so I can understand a little bit. But it was difficult. And at that time, I felt like it was more, well, I felt that as a player, that I didn't, they didn't value me anymore. That's what I felt. I'm gonna be real. That's what I felt. They didn't value
me. How old were you at the time?
It was 2011? Right after I left Hanover.
Maybe 30, 31.
Yeah, 29, 30. Something in that area. So, you know, I still had some, I felt good years of play. You know, obviously I just needed a good position or a good opportunity to play because I didn't play much in Germany. And, you know, but I just felt, literally, I felt they gave up on me. That was what I felt. And so, I told them that. And then
did Rich come sweeping in, or did you go to
No. After that, I didn't have an agent for a while.
Oh, okay. So when you and Rich worked together, it was later on in your career.
Yeah, so
I'd like to know from Rich, from your point of view, how hard is it to juggle and treat all your clients, you know, with like that situation right there, right? Like, I'm looking at from an agent point of view, like, sometimes you get spread thin. Do you feel like that happens, I'm sure, a lot with you and your company, or no?
Listen, first of all, it's a hard business, but all of it goes back to what I said, right? It's all about relationships and communication. And, you know, I'm sure there's people who probably felt over the time that I haven't done things, whatever, the perfect way and the right way. And, you know, like all of us, right? We're human beings. You try the best you can. And for me, it's about trying to communicate, you know, what your needs are, what we're trying to, what you hope to see happen. And so, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, listen, you know, if someone's got an issue, if someone's got a problem, you know, whether it's professionally or personally, you know, communicate it. We'll talk it through. We'll do the best we can. And everyone's got their perspectives, and nothing's, you know, it's gray, right? Nothing's usually clear one way or the other. And look, I think, practically speaking, you know, again, the nice thing is, you know, I got a group of folks now that work with me that can also help out, you know, our clients. We're all only one, like I'm only one person, right? You know, I'm on this Zoom now, right? So I can't be somewhere else at the same time. So, you know, you got to just sort of figure out how you're balancing your time and prioritizing your time, you know, and, you know, again, I'm never going to slag anyone else, you know,
we're not about slagging people. We're not here to call anybody out. We're here to learn and actually talk.
The only person that slags people is bees. Bees don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Bees he'll drag your name.
I still fuck with Lyle.
If Bees finishes his story, I mean, part of his story will be that, you know, he came on, you know, much more so obviously because of Corey, and who's one of the agents, you know, and Corey Gibbs is somebody who's obviously had a good career and played with these guys as well, and then decided to become, and I repped him his whole career. And it would be great because as I think about your question right now, listen, Corey and I, when he was a player, right, he started in Germany at St. Pauli in the Bundesliga, came to MLS, went to Holland, England, back to MLS. And, you know, we were together through every one of those deals. And we'll both be the first to admit our relationship at times was pretty rocky, right? Because he also would have people coming to him saying this and that and this and that. But the good thing about me and Corey, we always kept it real, right? And he'd call me and say, you know, I'm real frustrated, whether, you know, I think I should be at this club or I should be playing more or this or that. And these guys are promising this. And the one thing I give Corey a lot of credit for is, you know, sticking with me his whole career. And, you know, ultimately, you know, he had, you know, you know, it was also fortunate, right? Because he ended up playing in the highest leagues and, you know, and I think he's probably still the only American who's played.
And listen, Rich, Corey's a dear friend of ours, but he talks so highly of you. And sometimes we get jealous that he values you so high and doesn't talk the same way about me.
But what I appreciate that. But what I appreciate about Corey is goes to what Bees was saying. He communicated real well. I would say probably over the course of my representation of Corey, there was at least a handful of times where it's like, I thought we weren't going to be working together anymore. Right. And, but you know, at the end of the day, it's like a relationship. You work through it and, you know, things worked out well. And now obviously, and that was a long way of saying, you know, when he became an agent, he and Bees were close and, you know, Bees came back on board, whatever it was. I lose track of time.
How do you feel about, like, you're talking about slander and brought up Corey, when like former players, you know, put your name negatively in the media? You know, a couple years ago, Jermaine Jones and Eddie Johnson had a conversation. I think you represented both of them. And they said good things and bad things, right? But to say publicly, how did you deal with that? If, you know, that came out, did you ever call those guys
after? No, listen, I shouldn't say that. I spoke to Eddie. I didn't speak to Jermaine. But first of all, like in what I do, you got to have thick skin in what you do. And I know not everyone's going to like me, and you know, and that I'm okay with that. What I want is people to, I want respect, people to respect what I do. And again, for me, it's simple. As long as I'm working in the player's best interest or my client's best interest, you know, if they don't like me because I'm a fierce advocate, or if they don't like me because they think I'm pushing too hard or this or that, you know, that's okay. And then look, when it comes to sort of, you know, former clients, you know, I can look at and I can point, and in both those cases, you know, the best deals I ever had were the deals I did for them, A. And B, you know, again, I'm not going to say anything bad about anyone. You know, again, I sort of wish, I wish everybody well. Yeah. And I think if, you know, I think in time, anyone who has these negative feelings or whatever, there's always two sides to every story, right? At least there's probably more. But I think, you know, even in those two cases, if they step back and ask themselves, oh, what was I bitching about, or what was I pissed about, or why did I say this stuff? They actually step back and think about it.
Yeah.
I think that if they're honest with themselves, they'll know a bunch of that stuff is absolute BS, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, you know, I heard things like too, where I think they said on that telecast too, that, or whatever, on that podcast too, that, you know, I was super close with Garber or this or that. It's like, you know, I met, you know, listen, I respect Don. I think he's done a really good job in his position. I never knew Don Garber, you know, until he started working with MLS. But ultimately, I also sort of look at all that. If people are taking shots at me, that means, you know, whatever. That means that, you know, that I'm doing a good job because, that you know, they view me as competition. So it's all right.
Hey, listen, man, we wanted you on not only to, you know, big you up, right, because you've done so much, right, and played such a huge part in the journey of U.S. soccer, especially as, you know, as we MLS and as well as the U.S. soccer national team. But, you know, we also wanted your insight, right, your point of view. And for the, as you know, so many people want to go into your field and want to become sports agents. Leave us with a little advice that you would give the person listening who has aspirations to be the next Richard Motzkin.
Well, first of all, I'd say be better than me, right? So don't try to be me. Try to be better than me. So that's one. But two, you know, and first of all, thanks for the words as well. But, you know, I look at all of us, and I'll answer your question in a second, but I look at all of us as sort of OGs who've been around for a long time to, you know, and as I said earlier, and I'll end where I started about the ecosystem, because I respect what you all do too. And, you know, and these, you know, you're doing at the grassroots in Fort Wayne too. Everybody plays a role in all this. And I think too many people out there are a bit full of themselves and think they play a bigger role than anybody else in this or that. And I don't think that at all, right? I think we're all part of building something special. I think we're, especially as we lead into 2026, which is going to end up being amazing here. And so everybody deserves credit, right? Even like whatever, people at MLS or US soccer who are behind the scenes, who nobody ever says their names or give them credit. You know, I think about those people all the time, because some of those people, whether they're in the events department or in team admins or whatever, have been around for decades. You know, they deserve credit too. And so going to your point, I think a lot of people ask me and say, oh, I want to be an agent and this or that. And so the first thing I always say is, don't be so narrowly focused, right? There's so many ways you can get involved in the sport, right? Whether it's, you know, working for teams, league, marketing partners, you know, whatever. And so as a starting point, you know, if somebody had said to me when I was a kid, you know, I'd be doing what I'm doing, I'd say, oh yeah, for sure. I love sports, right? I played baseball and basketball growing up religiously. That's all we did. We didn't have the internet and all this stuff. If somebody said soccer, I would have said, you're out of your mind. I didn't play it growing up, right? I fell into the opportunity in the early 90s with the World Cup here. And then obviously I fell in love with the sport. And I, you know, so you also have to be flexible about, you know, don't just pigeonhole yourself. If there's an opportunity in sports, you know, be creative, think outside the box. And that's another thing we didn't talk about much here, but I think that's a lot about what my career has been defined for me, is always not accepting status quo. Everyone always says, oh, this is a form contract, or this is all you can do. You know, everybody gets the same thing. I don't give a fuck what everybody else did. I care about what I'm going to do for my client, and whether it was like sending Landon on loan to Everton and Bayern Munich when nobody had ever done those short-term loans and things like that. It's about thinking outside the box and doing really special things for your clients. And then the last thing I would say just about breaking into this industry, you got to work your fucking ass off. I see so many people who talk and say, you know, but the work ethic, anyone is super successful in anything they do. And you guys know, you guys played not only international football, but for our country. To do that, you got to fucking work your ass off constantly when nobody's looking, when nobody's watching. And so to me, right, look, you know, I'm still the first guy here. I'm the last guy to leave. I'm working weekends because for me, it's simple. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to be the best at what I do. Like the day I don't like what I'm doing, the day I'm not motivated to be the best at what I do, I'm done. Like, period. Right. But I think there's a lot of people who don't appreciate the work that's required to be successful at whatever you do, period. So, you know, be flexible, work your ass off, and don't give up easily. There's a couple things to think
about. You heard it first.
I like that. Thanks for having me on, boys. You guys took it easy. I mean, I know Gooch still wants names, but I'm not giving
up. I want names, phone numbers, social security. I want it all.
Maybe next time you guys have me on, I'll be a little more tired. Not and give me support. But
all right, brother. Thank you again. I appreciate your time.
You too.
All right.
Likewise. Have a good
appreciate
one, guys.
It, Rich. Thanks, bye. Rich.
There you have it, Mr. Rich Motzkin. He weaseled out of us, fellas. He weaseled out of us, man. But it was good, man. It was good. It, you know, Gooch is not happy, but it was. You know, you can't expect.
We got about 65% of the beef that we wanted to get in that.
But listen, man, it's about the knowledge, right? And I think I'm just so happy he came on. I think he did get.
He's a gentleman. He didn't want to slander anybody. You know, and
as
I respect
be.
That.
As you
I respect
be.
That, you know, because reputation is part of his profession as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to, he's still working. So,
yeah, I would have been talking shit about everybody, guys.
Receipts, man.
Oh, man.
Hey.
Well,
Gooch, take us out.
Right. What to say? Great guest. You know, like you said, first agent. Hopefully we're going to get more kind of guests like that to kind of keep everybody on their toes. We got a nice lineup of people. Hope you guys stay tuned for the next episodes. I'm going to get my ass to bed because it's after 2 a.m. here. These boys sitting in their luxury booths over here. The sun's still out. So until next time, what are we doing, Bees?
Hey, I'll see you when I see you.
Like, come on, brother. Please, you have one job.
Sorry, my bad. Like, subscribe. What's the other one?
God bless. Good night, man. You're definitely not the Russell Simmons of our podcast, man.
Man, it's 8:30, man. I had a long day.
He talking. Oh man. All right, peace.
Yes, sir.
At Capella University. You'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake.
Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer Rear Tine Tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.